going to pull this along in front of me. I don't know if you can hear it.
It's lousy.
Can you hear that?
Right.
I just feel very uncomfortable.
I think you have a little...
a little resonance back. Is Charlie Skoos from Ketchikan, 75 years in Alaska. Is he here? We got to wave out, Charlie.
Get off.
My script says Ketchikan. From Juneau. Excuse me, Charlie. I was instructed earlier not to introduce members of my profession or trade, fellow politicians, so I'm sorry I can't introduce Ed Barber or Forbes Baker or Sigwald or Neil Rhodes or Paul Bryden sometime later. Is Myrtle Braflout here? Myrtle Braflout, she's supposedly the oldest member of this group. Excuse me. I'm going to try to talk without aid of this microphone. I don't think I'm gaining anything.
That's it.
Brother Barber, did I see Brother Barber right in the back? I'm very sorry. I'll shout from up here. We've got a big group. Brother Barber, Brother Ed Barber, could you conduct Myrtle Braflout to the stage here? There's going to be a drawing. Perhaps we can bring up the tickets for the drawing at this time, too. I'm very sorry about the confusion here. Past Grandmaster Otto Copen is 93 years old. Where is Otto? You want to introduce Otto Copen? He's here? He can't be here. Otto could make it, but we certainly appreciate it. Many years of contribution to the pioneers. You know Clara Russ? She's affiliated to Fairbanks. Been pioneering. Can you hear me from here? Okay. Can you hear from the back now? No. What about now? Can you hear back there? I apologize. I'll stand in the middle of the room a moment and shout, and we'll make it one way or another. What about now? People at the end of the room can't make it. Well, I think I'll go down to the center of the hall. I've got a good loud voice, and I hope we'll be able to make it.
Stop talking back there,
they
can't hear you.
Yeah,
that's a profound
statement.
That's
right.
Just talk. I know it. I'm going to have to be on the...
Somebody clear in the back
said,
no, they can't hear me.
Don't be quiet.
Testing. Whoever set up the sound system, it'd be somewhere in the vicinity. Would he please come up and see us so we can talk about it, did you? Okay, we'll work on the sound system. Meanwhile, please, everybody be as quiet as you possibly can because Jalmer's right there and he's going to talk to you. If everybody shh, very quiet, you'll be able to hear you fine.
Thank you. got a beautiful frame on it.
Oh,
Neil Brown, would you see if Mrs. Earl Barry might probably do the drawing for us here? You have to be quiet because we will read the numbers off of Mrs. Barry draws. Thank you for your cooperation.
Tremendous
voice. All right, 268 for 268 for the soapstone drawing.
We're going to test this out and see if maybe we can put it around.
Not too tight, Larry.
Can you hear me? I think that's tough. Well, thank you, Jay. President, distinguished guests, pioneers, Alaskans, one and all. I remember it may not have been your last Pioneers Convention here in Palmer, but I think it was in 65 or 66, I know I came up at that time. A lot happened since then. Some of us have gone on to other jobs. Some of us are still in our same jobs. Some of us got fired. I was kind of glad to see Charlie Brown win that first prize because it reminded me of our working together nearly 33 years ago, and you know, maybe he just doesn't look older, maybe I'm getting older, but Charlie, you're looking great. I really and truly look forward to this evening, ever since I received the invitation to speak here. Somehow, no matter where a person that's in love with this country goes, he's always home among Alaska's pioneers. And I consider one of the greatest honors ever given me was when I was given an honorary membership in the Ketchikan Igloo. And I think it's one of the greatest tributes of my lifetime. I've entitled my remarks this evening, The Young of Thought. Because all pioneers that I have met are really young of thought, regardless of their age. They are young-minded. They're independent. Otherwise, they wouldn't be pioneers. And as we look back in the last 50 years, and then look forward, this last of ours, in fact, the whole North Country, is just on the brink of coming into its own. Many of us, most of you, have struggled that this day would come. Those of us who have lived through part or all of that struggle have no fear for the future. Now, I'm not going to stand here and say it's going to be easy. But I needn't even mention that here. Because you all know that hard times are not necessarily bad times. You know, Alaska has really never been an easy land. But its challenges have produced greatness, not just in isolated leaders here or there, but in the individual, man and woman, the miner, the fisherman, the timberman, the builder, the housewife, and the mother. The very size of the challenge up here has kept us young. And I hope for our future that our attitude remains the same. Because I still find that attitude in Alaskans of all ages. I'll never forget, it was February a year ago, when Alaska first got its direct dialing system outside. It was on a Sunday. I got up that morning, and the first call I made was really went to one of my great friends, one of Alaska's great friends, Ernest Greening in Washington. As I recall, it was his 84th or 85th birthday. And Wally, he said in a booming voice, he just busted it out, he said, Alaska has so many opportunities. There are so many things to do. Now here's a man in his middle 80s talking about the future. Then he began to outline on the phone to me the things that should happen in the next 20 or 25 years. That's the kind of vision. And that's the realism and depth in our Alaska people. I think one of the great compliments
I was a little paid and came to be my pioneer when I opened the Captain Cook Lantern in 1965. You might recall pioneer legislator E.B. Collins. I had him come up from the Sitka Pioneers Home. And he was the first registered guest. And I was very proud of that. And as I wheeled him into that lobby in a wheelchair, he paused for a moment, he looked around, and he said, "Wally, you have the finest roadhouse on the freight." Now, there just isn't any question in my mind that with a sense of vision and realism, depth, and youngness in our thought, Alaskans have every right to be optimistic and enthusiastic about those years that are going to be ahead. As you know, the U.S. Congress is finally coming to grips with the Alaska Pipeline issue. And hopefully, and I believe, that enabling legislation will be signed into law in the next few weeks. But you know, in reality, in 1969 and 1970, the conservationists raised vital questions. And I think Alaska has profited from that controversy. And the pipeline in Alaska will be better because of it. Now government, industry, and the scientific community are to be congratulated on the cooperation that has gone into solving the problems surrounding this issue. We must know that Trans-Alaska Pipeline is the largest project ever built by private enterprise in the history of man. But I like to think our future goes way beyond that project. Jay, you remember when I opened up Pluto Bay in 1966, less than a month after I became governor. It was the first step in a total plan for the North Country. Many of you might recall the North Commission, a commission that we set up at that time, based on the belief that there had to be a total plan. And transportation, even more than oil, is the key to Alaska's future. But I don't want you to think that I was the first person that had that concept at all. The real visionary went back to the early 1900s. It was Judge James Wickersham. You might recall that this man came up here from the state of Washington. Came up at a time when he was appointed a judge in the 3rd Judicial Division. An area that encompassed about 300,000 square miles without a courthouse or a jail. And he literally set out to bring about law and order. I would like to think that he was really Alaska's first statesman. And I tied it into transportation because there's many things he did. This man had a total picture, a very clear picture, of all of Alaska and its needs in the future. You might recall that he was the first one that introduced the statehood bill. But back in 1914, as I recall, after he was elected a delegate to Congress and served there so well for about 12 years, he asked to be heard in a joint session of Congress. He only asked for 15 minutes. He wanted to talk about transportation. He talked for his 15 minutes and he sat down. And they asked him to keep on talking. And he talked for 5 hours and 45 minutes. But out of that came one of the cleanest, simplest acts of Congress. Alaska Railroad. And it was about 4 or 5 sentences long. And basically it said that this authorized the president to construct not to exceed 1,000 miles of railroad in Alaska. And its primary purpose was to open up the country. Well, I think that primary purpose is still here because the job's just half finished. And after 60 years, I think it's time we got on. You know, the problem of the Arctic is total, as I mentioned before. He saw that. It is not just in conservation, or in oil, or in mining, or in the movement of people and supplies in and out. It is all these things. And that railroad north to Prudhoe Bay and west on to Bering Straits is still the most economic, efficient, and environmentally sound solution there is. Now, what do I see for Alaska's future? I literally see $1 billion a year being spent in our state in the next 10 years, just in the production and distribution of the oil from the North Slope. And I see other great fossil fuel structures being located intact, in addition to the 30 billion barrels of oil already known on the North Slope. Other Alaskan oil reserves, both on and offshore, add another 20 to 30 billion barrels to the total potential. And to those reserves in the ocean, on the continental shelf, out to a depth of about 200 meters. And you take all that, and the total potential swells to an unbelievable 600 to 750 billion barrels of oil. And I see three pipelines. France-Alaska pipeline, as it'll start sometime next spring, followed immediately by a gas line, because of the tremendous amounts of gas which will be produced at the same time with the oil. And the United States as a whole urgently needs natural gas because it is one of the cleanest fuels known. I can foresee the day when the automobile throughout the United States will be powered by natural gas, just as we use propane now back in the tractors on the farm. The technology is simple. And Alaska's natural gas reserves can help supply the great amount of gas that are needed.
Thank you very much.
In that situation. Now, our reserves in this state are estimated at between 258 and 438 trillion cubic feet. Now, a 48-inch natural gas pipeline would deliver about 4 billion cubic feet of gas a day. At that rate, the Alaskan reserves could fill that pipeline for over 200 years. Along with that natural gas pipeline, I see a second oil pipeline. When both oil lines are in operation, we will have the capacity to deliver 4 million barrels of Alaskan oil a day to the lower 48s. This is about equivalent to the entire amount of foreign oil that is being imported to the United States at this time. We must understand that this importance goes far beyond our country of Alaska. When America imports oil from the Middle East or from Venezuela, it bleeds our dollars away from our country. If those same dollars were spent in Alaska or other parts of the United States, they would turn over and over again, producing jobs, taxes, and benefits to our people. But when we buy oil from abroad, those dollars are literally gone forever. As far as Alaska is concerned, the development of our natural resources will have its greatest benefit in the royalties which will be added to the public sector. This money will be used to take care of those services the individual cannot do. Education, health, roads, just to mention a few. But in spite of the picture I have just painted, I believe that in terms of economic significance to the state, the employment in dollars generated by the development of natural resources will be surpassed by another potential, and that's recreation.
Thanks very much.
Now, all of us love this country, the trees, the mountains, the valleys, such as this magnificent valley we're in here this evening. And I've traveled the world over. If I had to be locked up in any area of the world, and I have said this all over the world, I would choose Alaska. Of course, there's a few months of the year when I get cabin fever, but it's less time here than any other place I know. And when you compare the overall picture to any other area, regardless of the obvious comfort or easy living they advertise, Alaska comes out number one. No, in reality, the world doesn't understand this. Not even all of America understands it. But as the Arctic day awakens, the world will learn. As the people of the world finally realize that in reality, the world isn't flat, but round. They will find Alaska sitting up here in the top of the Pacific, the true bridge between Asia and North America, and the shortest stopover point between Central Europe and the South Pacific. And as recreation and leisure time becomes available to more and more of our world's population, Alaska will become most highly valued for its capacity to refreshen and awaken the soul and spirit of man. I predict that Prince William Sound will become one of the great recreational locations of North America. The same is true for the great fjords of Southeastern, fjords that rival any waterway in the world. You know, the fact is, as Larry Beck mentioned about the coastline, Alaska is reality a marine country. What do I see in people? Well, I don't see a population of 10 million people, but I do see a growth rate that is comfortable and manageable. I see the service industries, one person serving and caring for another. I see that as the great employer in the future. And I see our parks being properly cared for and made accessible to the millions of Americans so they at least have an opportunity to enjoy them. In this respect, in many ways, we've been ignored. I think the classic example is Mount McKinley National Park, one of the great parks of the world. Most Alaskans know and take pride in Mount McKinley. But the attitude of the National Park Service in Washington has bordered on criminal neglect. Thousands of Americans, young and old, are drawn to our state every year by the reputation of North America's highest and most beautiful mountain. Many go away slightly disillusioned and a little disappointed. There is not even one road in Mount McKinley National Park that is up to National Park standards. The young hiker and the backpacker doesn't need a road. In fact, he doesn't necessarily want one. But the thousands of other Americans, many of whom have stayed for years to visit this great national landmark, cannot enjoy Mount McKinley without the simple convenience of a well-kept road. Well, in reality, it's not the fault of any one individual or any one administration, as much as it is a mentality out of the past. No decision makers in Washington, D.C. have always thought on a temperate zone basis. And they have not considered Alaska as a unique geographical location with unique climatical conditions. When they make a decision or an edict or an engineering ruling, they think in the terms of everything can be solved like Oklahoma City or Wichita, Kansas. Well, in reality, as they think around the world, in a temperate zone, that will work. And even our 50th state, Hawaii, will fit somewhat in that category. But as you move north, the farther north you move, the more different the problems become. Not difficult, but different. And planning and care are essential. But the greatest necessity of all that I see lacking, and one we need, is understanding. You in this room have the understanding and the wisdom, born of a lifetime of experience. I have said many times that if you want the naked truth, ask the very young or the very old. It is only the people in the middle who have a special interest, who color what they have to say. And if Alaska ever needed the wisdom of its retired young of thought, it needs it now. With your understanding of the balance between use and conservation, the new generations of Alaskans will be able to both utilize Alaska's resources and have them become compatible with nature. You cannot isolate man from nature. He must be made compatible to nature. And I know by your makeup and attitude, you will stay concerned and stay involved. Because believe me, this country has just started, and it needs your guidance. With that guidance and the energy of the new pioneers who come to help us, Alaska will always be a great land and will truly become a showcase of the future. I thank you.
No, it's too far. I'm more getting it.